Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to a very momentous occasion here on the Between the Tackles podcast. We got week six coming up, week five in the rearview mirror. We're going to break down a little bit of what happened. We're going to go look ahead into next week. But first and foremost, Barish, Manish, how we doing, boys?
I'm fantastic. I think week five was probably my the highlight of my football life over the last 5 years. I don't know about you, Joe, but highlight of my life.
Maybe if I went 3-0 on picks and then also the fucking Pats beat the Bills. Manish, what's up, dude?
What's going on? I'm not doing as well as Burge is, but I'm really happy that my Patriots pulled off the upset, as I predicted, right?
So, yeah. Quote unquote, hold on, let me scroll back a couple pages. Quote unquote, we'll have a tough time keeping it close.
That sounds like something I would say.
31-20. Yeah.
It was definitely like a throwaway quote at the end of a sentence, and I was just like, nope, stop the brakes. But yeah, let's just jump into the Pats. Let's get rid of week five, and we'll dive right into week six. Proverbially, the Pats are back. They're not a Super Bowl contender, but I think they're a competitive team. Anybody on their schedule should be worried about playing the Patriots. Drake May is a legitimate stud. Mike Vrabel has his operation working and everybody pulling in the right direction, which you haven't been able to say about the Pats in a couple years. And I want to, before I hand it off to you, Barish, because I don't want to get too worked up off the jump here, because I you might lose me. But I was wrong about my assessment of Mike Vrabel. I don't say I was wrong in saying that the expected program that I thought we were going to get isn't really what we have. I think that Mike Vrabel has somehow transformed into a different head coach than we expected, and he was in Tennessee. He still has the big game makeup. He still has the underdog mentality. He's a super intelligent defensive mind. But I think that what you saw on Sunday was, to quote Michael Irvin, play, make or make a play. It was most of that in the second half was the Patriots had the best players on the field. And you haven't been able to say that in a really, really long time. And I think I'll tie it all together here and hand it off to you, Burge, but trusting Ramondre Stevenson on kickoffs and goal line rushes after his whatever 10th fumble in the last two games, and Drake May and Stephon Diggs creating the chemistry and doing that backyard bull crap that we all love. Like it's all coming together. It's all making sense for me now. He's creating a culture of a place where players are secure in their role, and they go out there and they just play. They don't think, they don't have too many things on their mind. They're given a simple role and they just go out there and play, dude. They go out there and play. And that's something that this team has been lacking for the last couple of years, over scheming this, having coaches that don't know what they're doing, not having the personnel. And it's like, finally, dude, finally, you see the Patriots go out and pay for a wide receiver and Stephon Diggs. They hit on Drake May, the draft pick. It looks like I'm going to eat my words, and they hit on Will Campbell, the draft pick. Even though he's been dinged up, I think Carlton Davis is the perfect second corner. Harold Landry hit. Milton Williams. Can we talk about Milton Williams maybe later in the podcast when we do a little superlatives? But I'm going to dump a bucket of water on myself here. I'm going to need to get in the cold shower. I'm not calling my doctor. I'll tell you that right now. It's been way longer than 4 hours. But, Burge, I know you had just as good of a time as I did on Sunday night. So tell me your thoughts, man.
Dude, that was the most fun I've had watching a football game in 5 years. Like, I need more primetime games to inject into my bloodstream because – it brought back that feel. You know, it was a big game. We knew, yeah, it's week five, but this was the measuring stick game for the Patriots. They needed to go in and be competitive against their division, the best, arguably the best team in the league. And they exceeded our expectations, at least mine. They exceeded mine. I mean, the defense played way better than I thought. I mean, if you had told me that the Patriots were going to limit the Buffalo Bills offense to 3 points in the first half, I would have probably slapped you in the face and said, don't get my hopes up. Like, don't you? I just thought that the way that they came out was unbelievable. They got a little bit of help early with the miscues on the with the fumble, the couple of fumbles that occurred by Buffalo, which very uncharacteristic for that team. I think this might have been the first game in since 2023 that they lost the differential, the turnover differential in a game, I think is what they had said on the broadcast. And, you know, you couple the way the defense played and the fact that Drake May, who did look like he came out with little juiced up, little bit slow, a little bit like amped up for that game. The fact that this kid has been absolute dynamite in the second half for the last few weeks is so encouraging and so refreshing for us who had to deal with Mac Jones and Bailey Zappi and the shell of Cam Newton for the last 5 years. It's unbelievable. Some of those throws that Drake May made, obviously, you know, you talk about the two that stick out in my mind initially are the sideline throws to Stephon Diggs. The long one that got them to, I think, the 5 yard line that set up a Ramondre Stevenson touchdown. And then there was one, I think it was a third down where he's scrambling, rolling out of the pocket. He throws the ball to Diggs. Diggs toe taps it on the sideline, hangs on. Unbelievable, dude. Like, you talk about Crisco. Like,
oh, dude, I was sliding around that, my fucking kitchen.
Our group
floor,
chat
dude.
Was going off. Like, the group chat
Gary
was going
the snail,
off.
Dude. It was unbelievable.
I got to think that it was Manish's entertainment for the night, listening to us go back and forth about this, the roller coaster of emotions. Like, oh, great. Ramondre Stevenson fumbled again. Oh, great. They picked off Josh Allen. Unbelievable.
Dude, and the funny thing is Manish and I both started fucking Ramondre and didn't tell each other until he fumbled in the first five effing minutes of the game, dude. Dude, but I think, dude, the thing is, dude, is you have, dude, I just looked it up. Drake May has almost a 77% completion percentage in the fourth quarter. Like, every single question mark about him has been answered over the last couple games. He turns the ball over too much. Shut up. He's not a high percentage passer. Wrong again. He can't do it in the fourth quarter. Wrong-o. It's just like, dude, this kid, he is a humble, competitive, hardworking, like young man. Dude, it is in
23.
Dude, it's so hard. I'm fawning on. Dude, I want to just have a beer with the kid, dude. He just seems like, dude, he had older brothers that were great pedigree athletes, dude. He just grew up in an athletic family. You can tell that he's been competing since a young age. Dude, him, oh my God, I'm fanboying out. Dude, him fighting off a defensive tackle, stiff-arming a defensive tackle to the ground and completing a pass. I'm sorry. The only two players in the league that can do that are playing on Sunday night, and maybe there's one more playing the Jaguars on Monday night. But, like, dude, we're seeing stuff. I almost said S-H-I-T. We're seeing stuff that we're seeing stuff that we ain't never seen before, kid, to quote the Baby Whale video, dude. Like, I am so – dude, we did it again, dude. We did it. I'm ready to go there. Dude. I'm ready to go there. Talk to me, Manish.
This is pretty predictable, but look, it was a really nice game by Drake May. And
Nine for nine in the fourth quarter.
You have to give him a lot of credit. You know, big spot, prime time, on the road, division rival, really hostile place to play. He made virtually every big play. And Bird, you touched on the two that stand out, the rollout to Diggs. But then the one – late in the game when he had the defender draped all over him. That was unbelievable. That was just that really, as great as that other play was, given the time and circumstance of the second pass with the defender really bear hugging him or whatever he was doing at the time and still being able to get the ball off before his knee hit the ground was just an exceptional play. I don't want to put the cart before the horse, but what I will say is that the early returns of May working with Josh McDaniels are good. And I know that, you know, a couple weeks ago, Patriot fans and maybe one in particular on this podcast was ready to throw Josh McDaniels overboard and talking about this, you know, burgeoning rift between the head coach and the offensive coordinator. You know, when calmer heads prevail and you give Josh McDaniels a little bit more time to work with a young quarterback, you'll see some of the good returns. And I don't want to jump to conclusions and make it more than it was. It was a great performance. You know, obviously, in the first month of the season, a signature win for Mike Vrabel. In this early portion of his career, a signature win for Drake May. but I think the sky's the limit for him. I think he can get much better. I just think we have to kind of pump the brakes and, not crown him just yet. The bigger part of the game, in addition to, some of the splash plays that May made, and, by the way, the resurgence of Stephon Diggs, who looked absolutely fantastic, I thought the bigger part of the game was the defense. Burge, what you touched on, specifically the run defense. Mm-hmm. For the first time in franchise history, they have not allowed a 50-yard rusher through the first five games this season. And if you guys know, which I know you're fully aware of this, James Cook was running all over everybody prior to that game, and they held him to under 50 yards. Just an exceptional job on the defensive line. Joe, you mentioned Milton Williams. Excellent pickup. I've seen Milton Williams up close and personal the last several years in Philadelphia. That defense, specifically the run defense, is going to take them pretty far. And as good as May is and what as good as he can become, I think this team is a legitimate playoff contender because of that ability to stop the run consistently. And that's what they've shown to this point.
I mean, I'll just say this. This team, despite all the good that happened in this game, still tried to self-destruct in the second half.
Still
came
out really slow, really unprepared, well, really slow.
They had the stupid penalties in the fourth quarter, with the roughing the passer, the hit to the head. Then you had Joshua Farma.
Friggin' dude.
Just lays out James Cook a mile after the play was dead.
We didn't wait. Did one of you guys thought that wasn't a penalty? I can't remember who it was, but I remember thinking
that
one of you guys.
That was a schooler play, which was definitely play. A penalty.
No, dude, no, it wasn't. He didn't even touch
it. There's that giant white line on the field.
Anything?
And they were on the other side of it. The dude was basically drinking fucking Gatorade. Oh, sorry.
If he pushed him, fine. If you want to call Marcus Jones there for playing the play too long, fine. I'll give you that one.
Marcus Jones is now a sacred cow on this podcast. I'll tell you that right effing now.
But the point I'm trying to make is the fact that this team still tried to self-destruct at the end. We've been calling for wanting to see Drake May lead a game-winning drive, right?
Dude, this is what you – sorry to interrupt, dude. This is what you get when you have the guy. You can overcome dumbass penalties. You can overcome all the mistakes. Sorry.
But this is the first time we saw it.
You're right.
In the past, you'd maybe get a overthrow interception or the team would just stall out. This was his signature moment where he led that drive. And that drive featured the unbelievable play of him stiff-arming a defensive tackle and getting the ball to Stephon Diggs. And then also another money dime throw into the pocket of the cover two to Kayshon Booty. And Booty with the wherewithal to just go down in bounds to keep the clock moving. Those two things, that's Booty going down in bounds like that is coaching. Don't go out of bounds and stop the clock to leave time for Josh Allen after Buffalo burns their timeouts. Don't give him a freebie. You know what I mean? So we saw the drive where he was finally he was on it that entire second half. We could say what we want about the first half watching the game, but as a casual NFL fan, if you're watching the first half of that game, you're like, geez, I think we even said it, this is a sloppy game, turnovers
dude,
everywhere.
I mean, you could say the same thing about the Bills in the first half and the second
Absolutely.
Half. Absolutely. I don't think Josh Allen was great in this game. I think you could see his frustration bubble over when he's telling Anthony Jennings to go Joe Sher himself when he's running by him. So I think there's a lot of things that factor here, but Remember when we had Tom Brady? Remember when we were really good and people would come in here and just act a fool? Peyton Manning would come in here and throw four interceptions, three of them to Ty Law, I think. Mm-hmm. You have all these uncharacteristic things. I know this was up in Buffalo, but when you apply that pressure that Drake May, obviously Josh Allen is watching the big screen and be like, holy shit, everybody's comparing this guy to me. I think he actually is. And he has Stephon Diggs now. Oh, dude. Now you see Milton Williams. As soon as Milton Williams or Barmore gets a little push in the pocket, Allen's gone. He's looking downfield. He doesn't have the playmakers anymore. Kincaid's mm-hmm. the only guy who can make a dent. And how much can you really ask a tight end like that, a possession tight end like that, to do to win a game? So, like, I think there's a lot of things at play here, but I think the number one thing that exacerbates all of the Bills' weaknesses is the fact that the Patriots apply the pressure, and the Patriots, I like, obviously Josh Allen's an MVP candidate, and Drake May is still an up-and-coming player. We'll wait to see later in the podcast, but like, you can still see those, like, you out on the field on Sunday night, the Patriots had the better coach. I mean, the better quarterback, and it wasn't even close.
They had the better coach, too. That's easy.
Yeah, they had the better, coach. The best part about this conversation is that we're only in early October, and I think we're going to be talking about a lot of great moments that Drake May and the Patriots are going to have over the next 2 months. You know, you don't look too far ahead, but if you just look at Snapchat over the remainder of this month, they're facing Spencer Rattler, Cam Ward, and Dylan Gabriel, their next three opponents. The three teams that are bottom five in the league, I think, by consensus. So there's a real world here where the Patriots could be 6-2. And then if you stretch it a little bit further, you're looking at the Buccaneers as their biggest test. The Falcons are no pushovers. But after the Buccaneers, there are three extremely winnable games. I don't remember the order, but Giants, Jets, what's the other game? Bengals.
Bengals, yep.
The Bengals. I mean, there's a chance before the bye, that a very real chance that they could be 8-5. And if they're 8-5 entering the bye week, they're firmly in position to make a playoff run. Even if they're 7-6, they are. But I would be very surprised, just given how the schedule is shaking out over the next, you know, 5, 6, 7 weeks, if the Patriots are not firmly in the playoff mix. And that's what we thought before the season started. Hey, if they can make a playoff run, even if they fall short, but they're legitimately a contender to make the postseason, this would be a successful first season for Mike Vrabel. I know as a Patriot fan, it's easy to kind of now, after that win in Buffalo, think, you know, why shouldn't we make the playoffs? But it's only one game, and they're still 3-2. I just think it bodes well for the remainder of this season. I think the future bodes well. I said that when Mike Vrabel was hired. I thought the same when Josh McDaniels was hired. I've always been a big, big believer in Drake May. I think all the pieces are in place for this team. Now, can they accelerate the process and make the playoffs in Vrabel's first season? It's certainly possible. But even if they don't, I think it's incredibly encouraging where this franchise is headed. And I'm not a Patriot fan. I'm just being fair and objective about what I see to this point.
Personally, from like my seat, looking just purely based on the schedule itself, I think if they miss the playoffs at this point,
thank you.
Something went wrong. You're looking at the Saints with Spencer Rattler, Cam Ward, Dylan Gabriel, Michael Penix, Baker Mayfield's a test. They get the Jets twice.
Right? Yeah, but you don't know what's going to happen over the course of the next 5 weeks with injuries. Right. And what if Joe Flacco's actually good for the Bengals? And that game doesn't look so easy.
Okay.
I mean, you're saying that, but a month and a half from now, what if Jackson Dart looks pretty good when they're playing the Giants?
What if Lamar Jackson and the Ravens are healthy by the time you play them?
You got to think.
Look, the Patriots are 3-2. They're not 5-0. They're not 4-1. They can be beat. So it's not. This is what I'm talking about. I understand the trap that fans get into. I've gotten into it myself with the Eagles and with other teams that I root for outside of football. But to say at 3-2, it's playoffs or bust, I just think that's a little bit too ambitious.
Patriots plus 7.5 was ambitious. So,
what's that, Bridge?
I said, you also thought me slamming the Patriots at plus 8.5 last week was ambitious. So, you know,
7.5.
It was 8.5 when I made the call.
At 3-2, you cannot say that it's playoffs or bust. You have to be objective about it. Okay. All right.
But no, dude, I mean, if you look at, look at the remaining 12 games. If you don't have the, this is assuming that Drake May is going to keep ascending. I'm not saying it's going to be vertical, 90-degree angle from fucking rookie quarterback to MVP candidate, but I do think that it's going to go, I think we are going to get some linear growth here when he starts stacking these games, especially against a quality opponent. But like, you look at the schedule, dude, if you don't have the quarterback advantage, you have the coach advantage in the majority of the games coming up. That's why I get excited. And I think, Burge, I think we're on the same page. It's playoffs or bust, as in we expect the team to be a playoff team now. But I don't think that the sky is falling if they don't. I guess that's where I'm at right now.
That's a fair assessment. If they are, if I personally believe they're going to be a wild card team. Like, and I think if they don't be a wild card team, it's not like I'm sitting here saying like, oh, the season's a bust. You know,
yeah.
You know, like
a couple bad injuries down the stretch. They don't play like something like that. Like, yeah, obviously, like when
you know, if they miss one, if they miss and they miss out because they lose, because you can point back to the Steelers loss or the Vegas loss as the reason why they miss. Okay. Like it's still a successful season and there should be no Patriots fan that should be in any way complaining if that happens. Yeah. Yeah, there'd be some disappointment, but.
Yeah, and it could be one of those seasons like 08 when Matt Castle took over where you go 11-5 and somehow don't make the playoffs. Like, there's also seasons like that where teams that are 9-7 get in. I mean, there's seven teams now, so that's probably pretty unlikely. But, yeah, you see teams with 8-9 get in, and you see sometimes teams that win 10 games get snubbed. But anyway, let's get off the Patriots. I unfortunately have to put away the Crisco. They have called. We're negotiating some kind of sponsorship right now. So if you see me glistening next week with a Crisco t-shirt on, you know what happened. But anyway, Burge, your time to shine, brother. Break out that spreadsheet.
It is time to evaluate our picks from last week.
Oof.
Oof. What a fun week, man. Just the Patriots win.
Yeah, wasn't it great, man?
You guys leave me the garbage at the end to pick. Who comes out 3-0?
How much picking was there? Is it just luck or are you actually picking the game?
Oh wow. Oh, we're gonna be like that. We're gonna be like that, Mr. 1-2.
A shot across the bow for no reason.
So let's just quickly recap last week. Manish guaranteed that he was gonna hit 2 of 3. Squeaked it out.
I shouldn't have gave you that fucking half point. I shouldn't have gave you that half point in London. That's the tax. That was the exchange rate to going over to London. I had to give up the half point.
Exchange rate.
So Manish had Minnesota got the win, -3.5. Lost the Chargers, who lost outright to the Commanders, and then the Bucks plus the points ended up winning outright against Seattle. I had New England, as I already have talked about. I had the Jets the Cowboys versus the Jets -2.5. That was an easy win. And then the big number with Detroit, -10 win. And then Joe, Indy -7. We'll be talking about Indianapolis a little bit later on in the podcast. You had Kansas City -3 in a wacky finish to Monday Night Football. And then
can I talk to Chris Jones real quick? Because I know he listens to the pod. Chris Jones. Can you put in an effort? Can you at least pursue the ball carrier? How about look in his direction? Dude's looking around. I couldn't believe that. I was screaming at my TV like I was watching a Patriots game. Sorry. What is he doing?
I loved it. Made sure that you were 1-2. So I was like, that you can do that all day, Chris Jones, all day. And you also had the other half of the London game with Minnesota. You had Cleveland plus the points. That didn't pan out.
All over themselves, dude.
So, Joe, you get something to be happy about. You still sit in front of the lead, the leaderboard here for the picks. 8-7, just above 500.
Better than Vegas, just saying.
Yeah. Burgeon now is in second place at 7-8.
Whoa. Oh, boy.
Wait, is the tie fucking Manish right here?
It is. Yeah. Manish is in the basement because he has one less win. So I'm 7-8. Manish is 6-8-1.
Ugh.
So that is the difference. We
6-8-1. I think the Seahawks made the playoffs with that record once. We were just talking about that.
But the gap is closed. The gap is closed. I've had a pretty good, going 5-1 over the last 2 weeks to close the gap. So we're right even now. So let's move on to week 6. I'm going to start off.
Wait, hold on. Before we go ahead a week, did anybody watch the Seattle-Tampa Bay game?
Yes.
That was, dude, one of the better football games, period, that I've watched in the last couple of years. That was such an exciting game. Came down to the line. There's nothing better than a high-scoring game where teams are playing at a high level and it comes down to the end. Like, that is a formula to make me not even think about looking away from the TV.
I didn't catch any of it. I was following it, and yeah, definitely those types of games are great for the league. So hopefully we can see some more of it, right? Let's see some more shootouts like that. But my first pick, I was given the scrap heap again because I'm slow to make my picks. But this was a pretty easy one for me to pick that you guys left me, and that is I'm taking Denver -7.5 over in London. They're playing the worst team in the league. New York Jets just got blown out by the Cowboys last week. Denver coming off that great comeback against Philadelphia. Love their defense. Loved it all year. And I don't see the Jets really having a fighting chance in this game. You know, we can say Justin Fields can have it, can, you know, turn it on at any point, have a decent day. Garrett Wilson, the Jets defense is abysmal. And yeah, so give me, that seems like it's an easy money win right there with Denver. Joe, give your pick here.
All right, so I like the Chargers to bounce back. They're -3.5 on the road in Miami. Miami just absolutely choked that one away to the Panthers. Was it the Panthers? Yeah, it was the Panthers. Just choked that one away to the Panthers. I think Mike McDaniels, if you watched him in the postgame, I don't know if he was like coming down from a high. Like, sorry to kind of accuse somebody of like drug use, but like, I don't, he was like stuttering and like really like, I don't know what the hell is going on with that guy and that thing in Miami, but like betting against it will be something I'm just going to practice for the next couple weeks until they prove me wrong. Then we're going to go to the Pats -3.5 at New Orleans. This is straight Kool-Aid. This is, I'm sliding around. I think, dude, I honestly think that New Orleans isn't the worst team in the league like everybody says they are. I think Spencer Rattler can be a decent game manager. They don't really have a lot of talent, but I think they're well coached. Regardless, I think the Drake May and Stephon Diggs relationship is blossoming. They have a good man defense, but I think that what Stephon Diggs did on Sunday night's perfect man beating stuff. They blitzed a lot. He got open after Drake May broke the pocket. So there's a lot of things that I like in that game, and I'm riding high on the Patriots. So give me the Patriots -3.5 in New Orleans. And then another one of those, like, bet against a shitty team, but I'm also betting on a shitty team. So, like, I don't know how this one's going to go, but give me Tennessee +3.5 in Vegas. Vegas stinks. I think Geno is finally at that point of the season. It happened a little early this year. He's finally at that point of the season where he turns into a pumpkin and they figure out the gimmick. I think Cam Ward's pretty legit. He doesn't have a lot around him, but I think some of the plays Cam Ward has been making these last couple of weeks pretty legit. I think they're going to be able to make enough plays on that defense that's still banged up. So give me Tennessee +3.5 at Vegas. Three road teams, all 3.5-point spreads. Okay.
I'm taking two dogs, and of these three games, again, guaranteeing at least two of them will be correct. The highlight game, the biggest layup game, I think, on the slate this week is, for some reason, the Lions are getting 2.5 points on the road against Kansas City. These are obviously not your older brother's Kansas City Chiefs, as evidenced by what happened in Jacksonville on Monday night. The Lions, after that week one loss to Green Bay, have absolutely erupted offensively. They've averaged 40 points a game during their four-game winning streak. I don't see the Chiefs slowing them down. I think not only do the Lions cover, I think they blow out the Chiefs on the road. The Kansas City mystique, I think it's eroding right before our eyes. They're becoming a really sad version of what they used to be a few years ago. Still, you know, teetering as a playoff contender, but I think the Lions have aspirations of winning the Super Bowl. I think there's a wide gap between those two teams this year. I think Detroit wins that game. I'm also taking the biggest line of the week, the biggest underdog, the new look Cincinnati Bengals against the Packers coming off a bye week. They're getting 14 points. It's an NFL team. I think we saw a couple weeks ago, Burge, I think you took the Saints getting a big number from the Bills and cashed in on that. 14 points is just too big of a number. Joe Flacco is going to be on a crash course, probably cramming all night, trying to figure out the Bengals playbook. Thankfully for him, he's got two stud wide receivers with Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins. The Bengals needed to do something. Jake Browning was absolutely brutal. They were non-competitive in their three losses after the 2-0 start before Joe Burrow got hurt. I think Flacco, even though he hasn't looked particularly good to this point in Cleveland, he's clearly an upgrade in my mind from Jake Browning. He makes those two wide receivers viable, makes Chase Brown viable in the backfield. 14 points is a lot. Maybe they get a backdoor cover. I don't know. I don't care that the Packers had 2 weeks to prepare. I think 14 points too much for a team that had so much talent on the offensive side and now a competent quarterback. The only favorite I'm taking this week, the Cowboys, I think they're giving 3.5 on the road to the Panthers. Panthers, as Joe, you mentioned, they pulled off an upset down 17-0 to a horrible Miami team. And then the Dolphins' run defense is absolutely atrocious. We talked about how good the Patriots' run defense is earlier. Like the bizarro Patriots run defense is the Dolphins run defense. They let Rico Dowdle rush for 200 yards. I just think that Dallas is going to have their way through the air on the ground with Javonte Williams. This is a team last week that destroyed the Jets despite missing four offensive linemen and their top wide receiver, of course, in CeeDee Lamb. So I'll take the Cowboys on the road. I'll take the two road underdogs, Cincinnati, and the Lions. The Lions are my absolute lock of the week. I don't care that they're playing in Kansas City. They're going to win this game, and they're going to be in control of this game from the start.
Real quick about the Bengals, I am requesting, just a personal request here, that Jake Browning's wife still attends the game in the box. Thank you.
Well, all right. I'll give you my last two. Another big number for a favorite, the Los Angeles Rams. They're going on the road to Baltimore. Lamar Jackson did not practice again today. Baltimore seemingly is a mess. The Rams are coming off a very close loss to the San Francisco 49ers. I think they're too good of a team not to bounce back. And again, especially if Lamar Jackson is going to be out of this game, I don't think anybody's afraid of Cooper Rush. He was not good against the Texans, where Baltimore got absolutely blown out. So Los Angeles Rams -7.5. And then because I have to pick an underdog and there wasn't much left, I'm going to take the 49ers +3 against the Buccaneers down in Tampa. The Buccaneers with Bucky Irving, doesn't look like he's going to play again. Mac Jones limited in practice, you know, today as well. But from what we saw from him against the Rams, I like that offense with him in there. Christian McCaffrey has been on a tear this year, staying healthy. And, you know, Kyle Shanahan, you know, they find a way to win these games. And I like them to at least cover, but I'm not going to be shocked if they knock off the Buccaneers in Tampa Bay. So San Francisco +3. We'll see where we shake out with this. You know, this could be a pivotal week where the leader at the top gets knocked off. Manish and I could overtake him this week.
Yeah, good luck, dude. All right, so we've talked a lot about these players. We've talked a lot about these players before in the podcast. So we're going to go – we're going to hit a quick superlatives. We're going to hit a quick MVP awards, DPOY, all awards, kind of like quarter poll here. Who wants to go first? We heard a lot of Burge. How about we go Manish first?
MVP, Baker Mayfield. Let's go Baker Mayfield. A lot of good candidates here. Baker Mayfield has done exactly what Joe, I think, predicted a few weeks ago when he dared us to think of a quarterback who you would rather have in the final 2 minutes of a game. And almost like clockwork, every single week, Baker Mayfield has a game-winning drive. A few weeks ago against the Texans, and then after the Jets blocked the late field goal, he had a game-winning drive against the Jets. Last week in that shootout that you guys referenced, a game-winning drive against a short drive, albeit, but a game-winning drive against Seattle. The guy has been absolute money statistically, you know, top five in passing yardage, I think top 10 in quarterback rating, just a money player. You know, there was a thought that there will be some statistical regression this year after his monster season a year ago. That clearly is not the case because he is playing even better than he did a year ago. And this is without Mike Evans now, without Godwin for the first few weeks. Now he's back, really doing it with an exceptional rookie receiver in Emeka Ebuka. But this is the Baker Mayfield show. I am so thoroughly impressed with what he's done to this point. And at the quarter pole, or slightly beyond the quarter pole, he's my MVP to this point. Defensive player of the year, I think the most underrated, underappreciated, underdiscussed defensive player in football, and that's Nick Benito from the Denver Broncos. He's one half of the best edge pass rush tandem in the NFL, along with Jonathan Cooper. Cooper, Benito have wreaked havoc. There's a reason why the Broncos led the NFL in sacks last year, and I believe they're leading the NFL in sacks this year. The guy's a terror, 2.5 sacks last week against the Eagles in Philly. I think their general manager and their head coach knew exactly what they were doing when they gave him a $100+ million extension last month. This guy's the real deal. I don't understand why he doesn't get talked about enough, but one of the absolute best players in football and my defensive player of the year to this point.
Dude, he's on pace for almost 25 sacks, dude. He's on pace for
and he had 13.5 sacks last year, and I guarantee most NFL fans didn't even realize he had 13.5 sacks last year. You know, he doesn't get the billing that some of these other edge rushers get, but just an unbelievable player. Second-round pick, premium pick. They knew he was good coming out of Oklahoma. You know, Cooper actually is probably a more intriguing story because he was a seventh-round pick. But both of those guys have just been unbelievable for Sean Payton and Vance Joseph's defense. So I can't say enough good things about him. But then we're going offensive rookie of the year. I'm going Tyler Warren. There's a couple obvious choices, but I'm going to go with Warren. He's on pace for 1,000 yards. He's been an integral part of that offense, a 4-1 Colts team, which may not have been 4-1 if not for some of the contributions that Tyler Warren has made. And he really came right out of the chute contributing. No learning curve for him. I like him a lot. Defensive rookie of the year, I'm sticking with my preseason pick of Jahad Campbell, inside linebacker for the Eagles. He and Zach Bond, one of the better linebacking duos in the NFL. The Eagles defense, not as good as they were a year ago. I've really been encouraged from what I've seen outside of one play from Jahad Campbell. He got beat on a long catch and run by Bucky Irving a couple weeks ago in Tampa. But other than that, I think he's been really solid, and I think he's got a real chance to steal this award. Coach of the year, I'm going with probably the most energetic coach of the year, bordering on hothead, Liam Cohen with Jacksonville. They're 4-1. That matches their win total from a year ago. This is a franchise that has had one double-digit win season in the last 17 seasons, and they are on pace. And as bad as that sounds, they are on pace to get a double-digit win season. Really doing a nice job. There's nothing exceptional about what they're doing. I think they're solid in some respects, offensively and defensively. Trevor Lawrence still has some question marks, but I think he's incrementally improving. The offense kind of runs through Travis Etienne at this point. The pass game hasn't been exceptional, but you got to give Liam Cohen credit, especially these last 2 weeks. Beating the Niners and Chiefs, even though the Chiefs are not what they used to be, is pretty impressive. So he's my coach of the year. And we've got our bust of the year. We're doing that. To this point, I'm going to stick with I'm sticking with Jacksonville. I'm sticking with Brian Thomas. I mean, this is a guy who had nearly 1,300 yards as a rookie. Some people thought he was better than Malik Nabers, his college teammate, a year ago. But he just hasn't connected with Trevor Lawrence. You know, the bulk of that yardage last year came with Mac Jones as quarterback. He just hasn't been on the same page with Trevor Lawrence. Thomas is also dealing with, I believe, a wrist or a hand injury. He's just not close to what he was at the end of last season. He's on pace for fewer than 900 yards, been a non-factor by and large this season. He made one really nice catch late in that Monday night game against the Chiefs, but largely been irrelevant, which is surprising to me because I thought he would really take off this season.
Who do you got?
I think that's it.
Who do you got as your offensive and defensive rookie of the year?
Defensive rookie of the year was Jahad Campbell, offensive rookie of the year, Tyler Warren.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry, I missed those.
All right. I'll take it away. Yeah. I'll take it away. So my MVP pick through the first five games, Matthew Stafford, leads the league in passing yards. I think we've been pretty outspoken about what we think about the Rams on this podcast and where we think they're going to end up at the end of the year. Only has two interceptions. He's one of those guys that when we were talking about Baker Mayfield, that is in that conversation that you would take over him if you needed to win, you know, a last minute drive. And I just think that he's rolling right now. If he stays healthy and continues this pace, he's going to be right there in the conversation for MVP this year. Defensive play in the year, I'm going to go with, you know, a guy on, in my opinion, the best team in football right now, and that's Aiden Hutchinson. 5 sacks through 5 games, and if you look at the last 3 games that he's played, he's forced a fumble in all 3 of them, and he's just an absolute wrecking ball on that defense for the Lions, helping that team continue to roll essentially pick up where they left off last year before they all got hurt. And, you know, we're kind of seeing what type of player Aiden Hutchinson is. So I think he's going to be right there in the conversation as well. Coach of the year, probably for me, the most surprising team this year. And that's Shane Steichen of the Indianapolis Colts. I think that, you know, at least I'll sit where I was when he made the choice to go with Daniel Jones. It was kind of like, oh, here we go. The Colts are going to suck again. You know, they're going with Daniel Jones. But I think that him being there and supporting the resurgence of Daniel Jones's career, coupled with the fact that they have an amazing running back in Jonathan Taylor, who has seen a resurgence this year as well. Steichen is responsible for that. And the turnaround that they've had has been unbelievable. You know, I mean, had a close win against Denver, but in the loss to the Rams that we just talked about, but they've been kind of scoring at will. And I'm very impressed with the turnaround for the Colts. Again, there's not one that I saw coming this year. Offensive rookie of the year, I'm going to go with Emeka Ukubu, like Gronk says, Emeka Ekbuka of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He has been absolute dynamite with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers this year with Baker Mayfield. Probably partially responsible for what Baker has been doing there in Tampa Bay. They've had significant injuries to Mike Evans, and Chris Godwin is just coming back from his kind of horrific injury that he suffered last year. And Emeka Ekbuka has been looking like a wide receiver one. I've been riding his coattails in fantasy all year. He's been an absolute stud. I think he's an obvious choice for that award. Defensive rookie of the year? Well, I don't really have one, but I am going to talk about somebody who's not going to win it. And he ain't going to win offensive rookie of the year either. And that's Travis Hunter. For a guy that was so hyped coming into this season as I think we had talked about potentially being like almost like a Deion 2.0 or baby Deion, with the fact that he's playing both sides of the ball and he's this freak athlete, has been essentially, outside of maybe a catch or two in the Monday night game this week, a non-factor on both sides of the ball. I think until he decides to pick one and stick with it, and the Jaguars kind of use his athletic ability there, you're not going to see, this is going to be what he is until we see, you know, him focus on one side of the ball. I think that if he's picking his career there, that's what he's got to do.
I feel like he has to focus on one side of the ball and be able to play the other side of the ball.
Like a gadget.
That was the great thing about Deion is he was a lockdown corner. He was a cornerback and a return man. But when the team needed a spark and needed some juice, they used to put him in, just like exactly. Marcus Jones on the Patriots. So, like, you need to either it's he plays full-time wide receiver and he's their nickel corner to cover, like, a really shifty slot guy, or, like, he's the vice versa. He's a lockdown outside corner and he plays in one package, maybe 10, 12 plays on offense max. He can't play 80 plays a game. It's not working.
No, it's right. Not working. And he's gonna wear out. You know, you're doing that.
He's a small guy. He looks small out there, dude.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So until we see that, he ain't gonna win any of these awards. My bust for the year, and this one I'm really bitter about because I rode Manish's guy last year in fantasy, and that's Ladd McConkey. He's had, you know, the Chargers have at times this year looked like the best team in the league. A couple weeks ago, we were talking about them as this elite team in the NFL. And if you look during that span of time, McConkey was essentially an afterthought for that offense. I mean, Quentin Johnson and even Keenan Allen are getting more looks and more production in that offense with Justin Herbert than Ladd McConkey is. And to me, I think the Chargers need to get him going, but to this point right now, he has been very underwhelming, and he's coming off a decent game last week, but the 3 or 4 weeks prior to that, he was essentially not involved in what the Chargers were doing. So for me, he's my bust guy for 5 games this year.
Yeah, I don't hate that one at all. I don't hate that at all. So
take it away.
Yeah, dude, I unfortunately put back on my pants after the first segment of the podcast, and unfortunately for everybody else, I'm going to go ahead and take them off again. damn it. I had a song queued up, and I'm going to filibuster until I can figure it out, because I'm getting pretty good at that, because I'm not swearing as much. And when you don't swear as much, you don't really have that like audible filter and that like verbal crutch that you really have to lean on. So what I'm trying to get to is that my most valuable player of the year, I'm taking the word literally, my most valuable player of the year is no other than that's right. Drake May is your 2025-26 NFL MVP. Fifth in yards, second in completion percentage, a 7-2 completion TD to interception ratio, and a 108 quarterback ranking. All good for top, at least top five in the league. You're seeing a player break out. You saw Patrick Mahomes throw for 57 touchdown passes and win a league MVP in his second season. Guess what? It's happening again, folks. Buckle in. The boys are back. Dad's home. Dad's home. Nobody's eating dinner tonight. You all have to sit in the corner because we're effing back, dude. We're back.
Drake May ain't throwing 57 touchdown passes this year.
He doesn't have to because Mahomes isn't going to run for 600 yards and 10 touchdowns, okay? So he's a dual threat, absolute MVP candidate. I have a couple more bookmarked tweets here. Shout out to my boy Boston Sports Imp, which is JSGII22661 on Twitter. Let's see here. Get my glasses on. QBs in NFL history with over a 4-game span in a single season with over 100 passes attempted, a completion percentage over 77%, a passer rating over 115, and rushing yards over 75 over the span. Let's see. There's one quarterback on this list, and it's Drake May. Oh, okay. All right, one more. Drake May, last 4 games in the second half, third and fourth down. All right, so listen here, folks, all right? This is Panthers and Bills games, okay? The second half – the last 4 games, second half, third and fourth down only, okay? So money downs, not your first and second crown BS, right, where you're gearing up for the run, you can run a little play action and do some little sprint outs and crap like that. Nope, third and fourth down. We call this nut-cutting time in the NFL, all right? 14 for 14, that's 100%, if anybody's wondering. 14 for 14, 188 yards, 2 touchdowns with that 158.3 rating, which is perfect, okay? We are watching the Patriots do it again. If you are the Jets or the Dolphins, just pack it in, blow it up. I would blow up the stadium, too. It's over. It's over. We're back, okay? And it's Drake May. He's going to be MVP this year. He's my pick because if you take the award literally and you put an average replacement on the Patriots right now, you're probably 0-5. But let's get to the next one here. We're going to go to defensive. No, I'm keeping him off. You kidding me? I'm worked up a lather over here. Defensive player of the year, I'm going with Devin Lloyd. We got 4 interceptions, 2 in the last game. We got an interception return for a touchdown. He's everywhere on the field. There was slim pickings at the defensive player of the year position after you guys went. But I think Devin Lloyd has been coming on the last couple of weeks. I think he's a nice versatile linebacker that might be able to maybe have a high tackle count, have a couple sacks, have a couple interceptions. One of those guys that can win the MVP. Coach of the year? Sorry to put my pants are back off. They're hanging on the rack over there. They're not coming back on.
What a 180.
We're going Mike Vrabel, dude. We're going Mike Vrabel. What a 180. Coach of the year. At the beginning of the year, I didn't get it. I was like, this guy's jumping off sides. This guy's hitting this guy out of bounds. It looks like a calamity. Are we going to be an embarrassment again? And then light dawned on Marblehead. All right? I see it. He's a player's coach. He's the perfect, as they were saying all day on 98.5 in Boston, he is the perfect Gen Z millennial coach. He trusts you. He lets you work through your mistakes. He listens to you. He might sound like a jackwagon, overconfident guy in the media and when he's talking about his offensive coordinator, which definitely was a nugget. You guys cannot tell me it wasn't. When he's talking about that stuff in the media, you kind of get your back up. But when you see what's happening and see how much of a player's coach he's turned into while still being able to inject that, like, winning quotient and that championship pedigree that he has as a player and a coach into the team, it's beautiful to watch. And after last year, I'm getting over my skis here because I love the Patriots so much. But, like, dude, what we went through the last couple of years, the last year of Bill, the one and only, thank God, the one and only year of Gerard Mayo, I think the Vrabel turnaround has been almost a complete 180. Offensive player of the year, I'm going to go Ashton Jeanty. He's top 8 in yards. He's averaging over 4 yards of carry on a completely abysmal Raiders team. Brock Bowers is hurt. They have no other weapons. You're seeing 7 and 8 man box, just like he was at Boise State. He's still getting it done. You had the one game explosion for almost 140 yards. Everything else has kind of been in the 50s and 60s. But you can see there that even when they are loading the box, he can still be a productive back. He's a couple touchdowns on the season as well. So I take Ashton Jeanty. I did trade him in fantasy because of how bad I had the number one overall pick. I did trade him for a couple first round picks. So I did kind of go against my own practice here. But yeah. Give me Ashton Jeanty, I guess, for Offensive Rookie of the Year. Defensive Rookie of the Year. I made a pivot at the last second. I am the resident troll on the podcast sometimes. So my Defensive Rookie of the Year is going to be Andrew Makaba? Makluba? The guy, the new
Eagle safety?
Yeah.
Eagle safety, Makluba?
Yeah, he's got a sack, an interception, a pass defense, and almost 20 tackles on the year as a safety. I mean, if you extrapolate that over a 15-game schedule, right, over an 17-game schedule, you're looking at 5 sacks, over 5 interceptions, and over 5 pass and deflections. So, I mean, the defensive rookie of the year leader right now in the clubhouse is Abdul Carter, who doesn't really have much stats-wise. So, if this dude can stay on the pace that he's on, you never know what could happen. Obviously a dumbass pick, but just entertain me for a little bit, right? And my bust of the year after what he did last year and every analyst and every that happens every year, they find a sweetheart. Somebody finds a sweetheart and they love him to death. But like this was the most obvious, like, what are you guys effing talking about of all time? Bryce Young. Dude, Bryce Young came into this year. He played well at the end of last year. Everybody's like, wait, he might not be bad. They don't need to go back in for a quarterback. They shouldn't try to trade for a quarterback. They should trade Sam Darnold and Baker Mayfield, who are two top 10 quarterbacks in the league right now. They should trade both of those guys to clear the pathway for Bryce Young. Wrong. It's just like, how bad is this guy, dude? When he played the Patriots, dude, he's not athletic. He's not big. He's not strong. He doesn't have a strong arm. He's not overly accurate. He's not a gamer. Like, sometimes they call players 5-tool players. He's like a no-tool player. So that's all I got.
Love it.
He did just rally his team from a 17-point deficit like 5 days ago.
All right. Well, you know what? The bust of the season, I don't like being negative, dude. So it's just slim pickings. You know what I mean?
Oh, one last thing. The Makuba's only interception this season was the one that went right through Travis Kelce's hands at the goal line.
Oh, no way. It's the one that Travis Kelce handed to him?
Yeah. Yeah. That was Makuba's interception. Uh-oh.
Whatever. Dude, Andrew Makuba, if you're out there, come on the pod, dude. Huge fan.
I like Makuba a lot, but I just put some context on what that interception was. I know we're going to move on to the power rankings, but I do want to say one thing succinctly. Drake May will not be MVP this season. He may be at some point in his career, not this season.
You never know. Top 10 odds right now. You never know. Crazier
just,
things
just like happen. The Pats were never going to beat the Bills, right?
They weren't. No, Birds, they weren't going to keep it close, dude. We're going to have a tough time keeping it close.
I will, after this podcast, we will bet. I will give you good odds on Drake May. that MVP.
I can't wait to hit the stop button, dude. I'm not lying, dude. Anyways, let's get to the best part of the podcast, our closer every week, the NFL power rankings. We're going to go 1 through 5. There's a lot of movement this week. I wanted the Pats at 5. Nobody would give me the time of day. I thought it
not
was
even
bullshit.
Me.
I thought it was fucking bullshit. Sorry to swear. I'm doing it again. It was effing BS that nobody would entertain me with the Pats at 5, even though they knocked somebody out of the top 5. Who's number 1? Burrs, go.
Talked a little bit about them.
Are we going 5 to 1?
Oh, wait. Would you want to go 5 to 1 or do you want to go 1 through 5?
Yeah, because if you go 1 to 5, nobody's really going to care after 1.
Take it away, Manish.
I'll go with, okay, so we have a team that did not play last week on a bye, the Packers. Again, they're the biggest favorites for week 6, 14 points against the Bengals. Coming off that weird shootout tie against Dallas, the Packers, to me, are worthy of a top 5 team. I think before we go much further, we should talk about a couple things. One, the 2 teams that did not make our top 5, or do you want to hold off on that? And the other thing is
a good way to end it.
Okay. Then I'll just say real quick, Packers are 5th, but if we just kind of spin it all the way down to the bottom of the rankings, I think consensus-wise, there's a legitimate case to be made that 2 AFC East teams are at 31st and 32nd, the 2 worst teams in the NFL. Clearly, the Jets, the only winless team in the NFL at 0-5, first team in NFL history to start off 0-5 with no takeaways, which is mind-blowing given that their new head coach, Aaron Glenn, is a defensive-minded coach. It's also been a particularly rough and embarrassing week for an embarrassing franchise on and off the field. Without getting into too many details, off the field, their team president is being sued by a former employee for sexual assault. Also off the field, not necessarily related to this Jets team, but a former first-round quarterback, Mark Sanchez, went through a lot of weird stuff in Indianapolis. I think everybody pretty much knows what it is. He got caught for beating up a senior citizen, which is highly unfortunate. And then the Jets lost. So the trifecta of embarrassment, you know, you've got team president, former first round quarterback, and then the current team, 3 horrible, embarrassing things happening to that franchise. The Dolphins, you guys already talked about, blowing the 17-point lead. They look lost. Mike McDaniel is obviously on borrowed time. He will, in all likelihood, not be around in 2026. So that's the bottom of the bottom, the worst of the worst. So I kind of want to get that out of the way and mention that our top 5 kicks off with Green Bay.
Dude, friggin' Woody Johnson's got to sell the team. I think that's the only way out of it. He's got to.
Yeah, he's not going to sell the team. The team's eventually going to go to his son, Brick Johnson, the guy who, you know, relies on Madden ratings when determining player transactions. So Woody Johnson is not going to sell the team. It's unfortunate for the fan base. I think I've said this before. They really do deserve better. But the incompetence of the franchise, the dysfunction of the franchise stems from the very top and then the people that immediately surround him. So let's just say that the stuff that happened off the field from a front office perspective was not surprising in the least bit to me.
All right, Burge, you on number 3 or number 4? So I'll go. Go.
I'll take 3.
All right, so we're going to go with the Jags here at 4. An impressive win on Monday night. I think they're 4-1 to start the season. We talk about coach-quarterback combo a lot on this podcast. I think they have a very favorable combo at the top there. I like what Liam, what did you call him? Fake tough guy, Liam Cohen, at the top there. And I like, dude, I like a coach-quarterback, dude, that could go back and forth. That coach can look on the field and be like, hey, can you get the guy in the GD chest? And Trevor Lawrence can like wave him off and be like, yeah, dude, it's tough out here. You don't get it. So I think at the time everybody was like, wow, look how this might explode and implode. But I think looking back on it, I think that showed a positive relationship between the two that they could have be comfortable to act like that and to express themselves in a way where they're being completely honest with each other. So yeah, I got the Jags. I think they're pointing in the right direction. I got the Jags at number 4.
Number 3, it's a team I've talked about a little bit when we were talking about the awards. We have the Indianapolis Colts at number 3. The career resurgence of Daniel Jones has been awesome to watch, arguably playing himself into the MVP conversation, maybe not quite at the top, but he's playing into that conversation. And you know, Jonathan Taylor looking like the back he was a few years back, running the ball like crazy, having the rookie tight end Tyler Warren show up right away as a favorite target for Daniel Jones. And not to mention their defense averaging over an interception a game. They have shown also a resurgence. And I've for one, have been for the first 5 weeks, have been waiting for them to really show that crack where it's like, okay, now got to come back down to earth now. Their only loss was a close loss, you know, and to a decent team in, you know, the LA Rams, a team that we have been talking about on here as what at points this season as one of the better teams in this league. So yeah, the Indianapolis Colts at three, I have not seen anything to make me think that this team is going to come back down to, you know, to earth, so to speak, going forward. So yeah, Colts at three.
Isn't it funny? We're 5 weeks into the season. And I think if we asked each other which was the weakest division in football before the season started,
yeah,
we probably would have said the AFC South. And we've got two AFC South teams in the top five games into the season. So, yeah, pretty remarkable. We'll see how much staying power the Jags and the Colts have, but clearly they're two of the better stories in the NFL to this point.
Permission to take my pants off one more time?
Denied.
Number two, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Dude, I think, Manish, I'm going to hand this right off to you after I get us going here. Coach quarterback combo, winning quotient, talent all over the field, young talent, old talent, overcoming injuries, next man up. I don't know how many superlatives and how many cliches you can say about the Bucs, but I've got some Bucs fever right now. I've got a ship. I've got a cannon in my pants, as they say.
they've got a cannon in the stadium, so you'll fit right in. Exactly. The next 2 weeks are going to tell us. We're going to learn a lot about the Bucs. You know, they've been winning by the skin of their teeth, and you can say, well, it's fluky. They could easily be, you know, 2-3 or 1-4 instead of 4-1. Or you can say, you know, they're clutch, and that stems from their quarterback, who is clearly, as previously indicated, been clutch to this point. But they've got the Niners, a tough test this week, and then in 2 weeks, going to be the game of the year to this point when they face the Detroit Lions. We're going to learn a lot about this offense. Now, honestly, now, on a personal note, I'm really happy for Todd Bowles. Yeah, I've always known that Todd Bowles is a much better coach than what he, you know, initially got credit for in his first stint with the Jets. You know, just not really a great situation. And he's done really well with now two quarterbacks, Tom Brady at the end of his career, obviously, and then Baker Mayfield, who, you know, not many people wanted, kind of a reclamation project. But I just love how Baker Mayfield can lift his team. They have no business being 4-1. They really don't. I don't care who they play to this point. They didn't have Tristan Wirfs, you know, arguably the best tackle in football for a few games. Now, again, as I said earlier, Mike Evans not around right now. Chris Godwin not around for a few weeks. Really just doing this with a rookie wide receiver, first-round pick, albeit, but still a rookie. And now they're starting running back. Bucky Irving's going to miss his second game. Who knows how long he'll be out. He's dealing with a shoulder and a foot injury. So they've got Rashad White back there who, you know, isn't going to, you know, dazzle very many people. I mean, I don't know how they're doing it other than concluding that this is a Baker Mayfield production. The guy makes everybody around him better. Just a true leader, the epitome of what leadership is. I just love everything about him. I've always been a big believer in Todd Bowles. I think they're a legitimate Super Bowl contender. And, you know, I think they're clearly worthy of being the second best team in our rankings to this point.
Bersh.
Numero uno. Team we've talked about a little bit already. If you've listened to us in the past, back in our early days, we were all about this team as they were starting to come into their own. That's the Detroit Lions. You know, we talk a lot. We've talked a lot about on this podcast about how week one can really be a true anomaly. You never know what you're going to get from these teams. And I think the Detroit Lions are a perfect example coming into the season with two new coordinators. You know, they dropped the initial game against Green Bay in week one, where they were not good in that game. And since then, they have been on an absolute tear. The offense is clicking. The defense is clicking. You know, the coach quarterback combo. I'll take a page out of your book. The Dan Campbell, Jared Goff, you know, set up there has worked now for a period of seasons.
I thought that was going to fall off a cliff when friggin' Ben Johnson left. So I think that's one of the more impressive things.
Yeah, and you know, the talent is largely all still there. The two-headed monster at running back, I think a lot of us, including me as a fantasy football player, thought that they were going to go away from kind of the I don't want to call it a committee, but like kind of the dual role between David Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs. That is working just as well as it did last year. And they're continuing to do these things. Amon-Ra St. Brown is continuing to ball out as, you know, Jared Goff's favorite target there. Sam Laporta is back again this year, and obviously they still have Jameson Williams also on that offense, and they just don't look like they've lost a step. Since that week one debacle against Green Bay, they haven't scored less than 34 points in a game. You know, they've dropped 52 on the Bears, and, you know, you could say what you want about the teams that they've played, but they have done exactly what you would expect an elite team to do against these teams. You know, I talked about Aiden Hutchinson a little bit when we were talking about our, you know, our year-end awards through 5 weeks. And, you know, they're my Super Bowl favorite as of today. And for me, last week I was like that too, despite some pushback. And, you know, you hear the national attention on the Buffalo Bills, and, you know, I have my bias there. But the Detroit Lions just seem in a different class. I don't know if you guys have anything to add on that, but
yeah, Manish, do you have any thoughts on any teams that may have not made the power rankings this week?
Yeah, two teams that were in the top five last week, including our number one team, right? The Bills and the Eagles fell out. I pushed back against the Bills not being in the top five initially. I still think they're worthy despite losing on Sunday night to the Patriots. The Eagles,
at least they were able to keep it close. You know what I mean?
They weren't able to keep it close. The Eagles, to me, probably shouldn't have been a top five team last week. They lost to Denver. I think Denver is an underrated team. The Eagles have played two good quarters in five games. So 20% of the time. The other 80% of the time, I think they've been really a subpar offense. You guys know how I feel about the quarterback. I don't see it to this point. You know, there's an interesting debate about what matters more to this point, the record or how good a team is playing. And I have always contended, you know, outside of the teams at the bottom, you know, the bottom feeders like the Jets and the Saints and the Titans of the world, outside of those types of teams, the record is not as important in my mind through five games in a 17-week season as how a team is playing. Because there are plenty of teams who have a worse record than the Eagles, or not plenty, but enough teams that aren't 4-1, have fewer than four wins, but are playing better right now, that I think are better positioned. The Eagles have to significantly improve on offense, or they're not going anywhere this season. You know, there are plenty of teams throughout history who have started off with really good records, including the Eagles a couple years ago, before they got their butts kicked in the first round playoffs in Tampa. Eagles are 4-1. They play the Giants in two of the next three games. And the sandwiched in between is Minnesota. Probably should win that game. But let's say they don't win that game and they just sweep the Giants, which I fully anticipate that they would. That would put them at 6-2. And at 6-2, almost at the midway point, you know, if you want to bury your head in the sand and say, hey, 6-2, nothing to complain about. I think you have to be smarter about how this team is playing. They are not playing well. They're not playing at a championship caliber level. Are they good enough to make the playoffs based on record alone? In all likelihood, yes. Are they viable contenders to the Detroit Lions of the world, to the Los Angeles Rams, who they, by the way, beat a couple weeks ago? I don't think so. I really don't think they are a legitimate Super Bowl contender based on everything that I've seen to this point, 4-1 record notwithstanding.
Bears, you want to pick up the other team here?
Yeah, the Bills, I kind of touched on it last week when I was arguing my case with Manish about why this game is going to be close. I mean, the Bills, albeit have been putting up points in their games, and they had an impressive come from behind victory against Baltimore. But if you look at the rest of their opponents that they have played this year, the Saints, the Dolphins, and the Jets, we just got done talking about how the two worst teams in the league are in the AFC East, in the Jets and the Dolphins. They struggled a little bit with the Dolphins. Took a, you know, the textbook Tua brain fart late in the game for them to win and to secure that win there. And then the Saints gave them a real run for their money late into that game up in Orchard Park. And then obviously they play the Patriots last week, and the Patriots, I think, kind of just gave the playbook on how you can really attack the Buffalo Bills offense. And that is, if you stop James Cook, the weapons outside for Josh Allen are not there this year. He does not have an elite playmaker. He's got, you know, Keon Coleman, who is a decent receiver, Shakir as well, and Joshua Palmer, who really has, you know, was with the Chargers for a while, but never really showed anything special when he was there. And so if you are able to bottle up their running game, they're, you know, you can really kind of, you know, quote unquote, neuter what they're trying to do. And their defense, you know, we talked about their defense last week about how their run defense was so bad. And obviously this past week, the Patriots weren't able to necessarily run the ball, and they beat him throwing the ball, you know, with the Drake May, Stephon Diggs connection. And they had no answer for that. So I think that their defense is an absolute liability. And, you know, we've seen a lot of times in the past where teams may have this high flying offense, but if they can't do anything on defense, eventually it sputters out. And I just personally think that the teams that we've listed off here through 5 weeks have displayed, I don't want to say more balance when it comes to offense versus defensive play, but like, you need to have a competent defense to be able to make deep runs in this league. You can have, you know, you can even see it when Tom Brady was playing. If Tom Brady was playing, they had this elite offense and didn't always have the best defenses when he was playing there, and they would always fizzle out at the end of the year. And, you know, I think that the Buffalo is a very vulnerable team if teams are able to attack them and stop their bread and butter, which this year is James Cook and that running game.
It's just a great week where we can crap on both the Bills and the Jets for, like, very good reasons. Like, the Bills, like, dad's home. You're not eating dinner back in the corner. Like, you're done, son. And then the Jets are legitimately the most inept North American sports franchise. Like, I don't even think we even have to talk about the NFL when we talk about how bad the Jets are. Like, you might have to talk about North American and global sports franchises to put in perspective how terrible they are. Terrible.
The sad part is they have talent. They have some talent there, and they just can't put
like
it together.
The classic, like, they have, like, dude, it's like North Korea, dude. Like, yeah, the storefronts and all the shit you see on fucking TV is great, but like, everything behind the scenes is poverty and friggin' starvation, dude.
Yeah. Now, what I will say is, and this will tie into what we're going to talk about to wrap it up, I do like Mason Taylor, the rookie tight end that they drafted. He has shown a lot of early signs of being a big-time contributor. He's really the only other option in the pass game, excluding Garrett Wilson. A lot of overrated players. We don't have to go through the roster search. I would say that they don't have much talent. I would say that they have some glitzy guys at a few positions, most of them who are extremely overrated, like Sauce Gardner, who I said last week, he got burned by Pickens on a long touchdown. Breece Hall, there's a million Breece Halls out there, nothing special. It's only Garrett Wilson and Quinnen Williams, in my estimation. Mason Taylor has a chance. And Mason Taylor was my fantasy sleeper pick of the week, which we didn't get to last week, but I think I got a good one this week for you guys.
Keep rolling, dude. Tell me who it is.
Burge is going to take the guy that I initially wanted, but there's a second guy, a guy on a team that we've talked about a lot today. I'm going with Ramondre Stevenson against the Saints. Antonio Gibson obviously out for the year with the ACL, so it's going to be a two-man show with Trevion Henderson and Ramondre Stevenson. I thought it was interesting that after the game, Mike Vrabel did say, despite the early fumble, you know, he's going to go to Stevenson. He knows that he's one of their better players. He knows he's going to need Stevenson if this offense is going to, you know, get to where they need to get to. So showed a lot of confidence in him last week with the two green zone touchdowns. I would anticipate him having, statistically, from a fantasy standpoint, a pretty solid game against a woeful Saints team.
Yeah, so my sleeper pick, the one Manish wanted, but I threw his name out first. Hussein Haskins with the L.A. Chargers. Omarion Hampton gets placed on IR. We already know about Najee Harris when he popped his Achilles. I like him to step right in. They don't really have anybody else. So if you're looking for a guy that could get you some fantasy points and some yardage, who's going to get touches and volume with the L.A. Chargers, it's Hussein Haskins. I personally am riding this one this week because Bucky Irvin ain't going to be playing. And Jordan Mason on a bye, and I only have Jahmyr Gibbs otherwise, so I needed to find somebody. And luckily for me, Hussein Haskins sat on waivers, and I was able to snag him. So he's my guy who I think is going to help be my stopgap this week. And seems like he has a real opportunity to carve out a real role with the Chargers, with Hampton being out at least the next 4 weeks.
Yeah, and the other thing real quick, Birch, is that he did play for Jim Harbaugh in Michigan, so Harbaugh's fully aware of what Haskins can do. I love the pick. I don't know how good he is in real life, but I know that he's going to get the opportunity this week, certainly against definitely the worst run defense in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
I might have gave out this pick last time, but I think, dude, I am so – these guys will tell you, I'm so effing bad at fantasy, dude. I'm so bad. I'm good at picks. I can pick spreads. I can pick games. Can do all that stuff. But once you break it down to the individual player, I'm kind of cooked. So I think I've already gave this one, but – dude, this is a good dynasty pick, a good week, good stopgap pick for a week. I'm going with Oronde Gadson. He's a backup rookie tight end.
Again? You gave him 2 weeks ago.
He's my only guy, dude. He's going to be my sleeper for the year. I gave him as a sleeper. He still stunk. I'm still riding with him again, dude. I'm telling you, if this guy gets – I saw him make one catch. You ever see – I get tricked by this all the time. So just like, don't just like turn. If you're good at fantasy, just turn off the podcast, honestly. But you see like that one thing that a guy does, dude, he like snared this one ball when he caught like three balls the other week. He like snared this one ball and like ran out of a tackle and like ran around a linebacker. And I was just like, hello. I was like, okay, caught the ball away from your frame, ran out of a tackle while you were catching the ball, and had this still kept enough speed to run around somebody and get out of bounds for a first down. Oh, okay. So just a little Joe Schur on the All-22 look, you know what I mean? Just giving you a deep cut, Oronde Gadson from 2 weeks ago. But still, I love this guy. I think he's going to bust out soon.
Well, I picked him up after you brought him up a few weeks ago, and he's done nothing for me. So
hey, he had 2.4 points last week. PR.
Man. League winner.
Yeah, dude, you never know, dude. Stash him on your bench in case you need him. But anyway, that was the Between the Tackles podcast. I'm Joe. That's Burge. We got Manish alongside as well. Jesus Christ. I'm chewing gum, dude. It almost fell out of my mouth. Between the Tackles podcast, Joe, Burge, Manish alongside as well. I don't know. You guys got anything else?
Go Pats.
Go Pats, dude. I'm so amped up.